Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every Dot Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Our foundation scripture comes from the first three verses of the 100th Psalm, taken from the King James Version. It reads, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that has made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture." To start our story for today, Earl had just witnessed a rare heavenly occurrence, a total solar eclipse. He called a friend in Raleigh, North Carolina, to tell her about his experience. Unfortunately, she was not at home when he phoned, but her roommate was, and she answered the phone. "Hello, Earl. I saw that you were calling," she said. Earl always considered his friend's roommate, Kathy, one peculiar lady. She wasn't like the other kids in the neighborhood while growing up, as Earl remembered. She mostly kept to herself and didn't socialize too much. Many thought her behavior was a result of her religion. One strange thing relating to that was the fact that her family kept the Sabbath on Wednesday. Midweek observance of this religious tradition was counter to the background of most of her classmates. "Hello, Kathy," Earl replied. "Could I speak with Mickey?" "Earl, your friend Mickey is not here. What can I do for you?" Kathy responded. "Hey, Kathy, I just wanted to talk to Mickey about the eclipse that I saw today," Earl answered. "Oh, Earl, she's not here, but I can tell you that we're ready for the partial eclipse that's going to happen later today. Don't you wish you would be here?" Then he replied with a question. "Wish I was there." He went on to ask a second question in scorn. "What are you talking about, Kathy?" Then he said to her, "We just had a total eclipse here in Oregon, and because of it, everything just went dark. It was just like nighttime. We had a great experience out here. Whatever you have in Raleigh cannot match that, not with only a partial eclipse." Not wanting to be outdone, Kathy said to him, asking her own question, "Well, Earl, you're right. We only will have a partial eclipse later today. But do you know what? According to a news report, we will have a total eclipse here in Raleigh in 68 years. Earl laughed and said, "68 years?" He asked the question in glee. Then he continued to say to her, "Kathy, you've got to be kidding. You won't even be around in 68 years. To keep the debate going, Kathy responded, "Excuse me, Earl. My physical body may be gone, but my spirit will be here to experience it." She was making reference to a scripture that says that our spirits will live on and on after we die. Not knowing how to respond to that, and more than anything wanting to end the debate, he said, "Okay, Kathy, just tell Mickey that I call. Bye." "Bye, Earl. I'll make sure she gets your message," she replied. And they both hung up after that. With his experience with the eclipse now history, including his terse discussion with his friend's roommate, Kathy, about it, Earl was eager to get back to Ashland and get on with his studies. Although the eclipse that he had just witnessed was fascinating, he was excited to learn as much as he could about the Spanish language that he was introduced to back in Puerto Rico. Science was only a distant thought. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. After his experience with the eclipse, Earl returned to Southern Oregon College in Ashland to complete his studies in Spanish. After going through a demanding program, he finally graduated with a degree. After graduation, he was offered a scholarship for graduate study in this subject at Kansas Town University, KTU, in Melbourne, Kansas. Without hesitation, he decided to attend. It would be a new experience for him, having gone to undergraduate school in Southern Oregon immediately upon his leaving the Air Force. While Earl was in Kansas for only 2 years, he quickly grew accustomed to the long winters that were non-existent in Oregon. One day, his classes ended early because of the weather. It had been snowing all day, and after lunch especially, the wind picked up. Earl had a lower-level English class, which met before things got to be progressively worse. With the weather not likely to get better, the professor, Professor James, decided to end the class early. While Earl was grateful that he wouldn't have to go to class anymore that day, he dreaded going back out there into the wind and snow, and, of course, the extreme low temperatures. All during the short class period, he saw, through some windows on the other side of the classroom, that the snow was coming down hard and the wind was howling, seemingly at times making its way through those huge windows, threatening to reduce the heat that he and the other students were receiving, still inside the building. "Wow, I don't look forward to going out into that weather again. It's so cold and windy out there," he thought. Professor James paused, then went over to the window to see if he could close it further, so that the air could not seep through. He tried to close the window tight, with no success. Then he said to the class, "Listen, students, I'm going to continue to work with this window. We don't need any of that air, that cold air outside, seeping in here where we are. Just hang on." So he continued to work with the window. But again, he was unable to get it closed anymore. The small space near the bottom continued to have air seeping in, making life uncomfortable for both the teacher and the students. As Professor James continued to look out the window and saw that the weather conditions would not improve anytime soon, he knew he had to make a decision. Well, the decision he made was to cancel the class so that students could get home before the weather worsened. Soon, the professor instructed everyone to leave and hope that they would get to their destination safely. Earl finally made his way out and braved the elements. He had to walk quite a distance to where his car was, shivering with every step. It was all he could do to keep upright with all the snow, slush, and occasional ice that was on the ground. Finally, when he reached his car, there was so much snow and ice on the door that he had to struggle to get it open. After scraping as much snow and ice from his vehicle as he could, Earl was able to open the door. He then climbed inside. Then he said, "Finally, I'm out of this miserable weather." Then he knew he had to get going, and desiring more comfortable conditions in his apartment, Earl started his car. But instead of driving immediately, he just sat there for another few minutes, appreciating being now inside and out of all that driving wind and snow. He had an older vehicle, so he had to let his car run a while so it could warm up. After he did that, he drove off. Earl did not live very far, only about 4 or 5 blocks but it seemed like 4 or 5 miles because of the slow drive in such conditions. Yeah, because of all of the snow, he tried to drive, but the bad roads limited his navigation, his way home, despite being so close to campus. It took him much longer than what it should have because of the weather. Yes, the slow drive was due to all the bad conditions that the weather created. The snow and ice, more often than not, made its way onto the road, and he continued to hear the wind from the inside of his vehicle, howling all about. Worse than that, it was a challenge to keep his car on the road. One good thing, at least in his mind, was that the few other vehicles that were on the road at that time were in the same predicament. Yeah, the only satisfaction he got was a knowledge that he was not the only one being affected by the weather. Eventually, Earl did arrive at his apartment, but again, he dreaded to get out and brave the elements. But he also knew the weather wouldn't change anytime soon. So, he got out. "Whew, it's really cold out here," he said to himself. He couldn't wait to get inside his apartment. As he walked, it was all he could do to keep the driving snow created by that howling wind out of his eyes. He continued to talk to himself. "Gotta find a way." Interesting enough, he thought just as much about having a snack once inside. And especially he looked forward to making some hot chocolate and rest comfortably sitting on that huge couch of his in the front of his fireplace, all the while watching TV. Suddenly, Earl opened the door to his apartment. Once he was inside, all he wanted to do was relax. Studying didn't even come to his mind at that time. He would do that a little bit later. What was even more striking than the weather to Earl was the new friendships he made while in graduate school. He didn't know it at the time, but his new friends were from Louisiana, his future permanent residence. Earl's introduction to Louisiana culture came from his KTU campus apartment roommate, Lincoln, who was from Baton Rouge. Lincoln, who was a very good cook, introduced Earl to Cajun food. Why, he cooked it often, especially on the weekends. But Earl didn't forget his purpose in school. Despite his trying to adjust to the weather as well as getting used to a lifestyle that was unfamiliar to him, that purpose was to learn as much as he could about the Spanish language. Graduate study was very challenging in those days, and during a typical week, there was lots of studying going on for both Earl and Lincoln, who was a graduate student himself, majoring in English composition. At any rate, it was on the weekends when Lincoln showed Earl the various dishes of a typical Cajun meal. Saturdays often consisted of grilling out on the shores of popular Lake Peters. Earl remembered that one weekend, Earl invited his friends from Louisiana to this public area. Everyone, all 12 to 15 people, gradually came to the park and sat on some benches near a large oak tree. In fact, there were several large trees in the park that provided the shade everyone needed to be comfortable on a warm, sunny afternoon. Springtime was especially enjoyable as everyone was eager to experience, finally, warmer weather. The chirping of birds signified that springtime had finally arrived. After setting up in the park, Lincoln said to Earl, "Hey, Earl, could you go to the car and get those beef patties, wieners, and buns for me?" Then Earl replied, "Sure, Lincoln, I can do that." In a short amount of time, Lincoln had everything he needed to throw on the grill. He fired up that grill, and after a while, everyone had all the food they could eat. Most of those present couldn't wait because of the aroma coming from the grill was almost intoxicating. Among the fine foods on a typical outing were hot dogs, hamburgers, and Cajun fried fish. Eating outdoors in a shady spot on a hot afternoon was made more bearable because of the low humidity in this region of the country. Everyone appreciated the view, which included a large lake and a scattering of maple and oak trees. The natural scenery was so relaxing. And a few of those attending brought their fishing rods and went to the shores of the lake to do just that. Well, Earl never cared about fishing, but oh boy, did he love to eat them. Yes, on occasion, Earl was exposed to much of the Cajun culture on Saturdays. On Sunday, Lincoln usually would invite a friend or two of his who were also in school at KSU from his home state of Louisiana. Those invited looked forward to the occasion all during the week. Lincoln was well prepared for the Sunday feast. He spent the latter part of the week gathering the food that he would prepare later that weekend. A favorite dish of his was red kidney beans seasoned with smoked ham hocks. He would usually soak the beans overnight, then slowly cook them on Sunday morning. Lincoln allowed them to cook on low heat while he and Earl were away at church, and by the time they returned to their apartment, a thick brown sauce surrounded the simmered soft beans that would ultimately be placed over steamed brown rice. The meal would not be complete unless Lincoln prepared a special item, which was fried green tomato prepared in hot peanut oil. Everyone really loved this dish, especially Earl. He asked for the recipe several times. Lincoln finally gave him the secret of making the dish a few weeks later. Lincoln also steamed cabbage with two small slabs of ham hock as the seasoning agent. He usually would prepare this with candied yams. And oh, those candied yams, a perfect complement to the collards and cornbread that was prepared. And speaking of cornbread, Earl would often make up a special Cajun recipe of Mexican cornbread and throw it in the oven to bake for about 30 minutes. After church, the meal would soon be finalized. Earl's graduate school tenure in Kansas with friends ripe in southern Louisiana culture prepared him well for his home in Forsyth, Louisiana. Earl immersed himself into the Cajun lifestyle in that region, and eventually, he graduated from KTU with a master's degree in Spanish. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Upon graduation from KTU, Earl landed in southern Louisiana after sending several applications to colleges, seeking to be an instructor in his degree area of Spanish. One day, while still in Kansas, he received a letter informing him that he had been selected to fill a teaching position at New Orleans University, usually simply called NOU, by the locals. It was one of the few colleges in southern Louisiana. Soon after learning he was offered this position, he moved from Kansas to New Orleans. After going over the details of his work assignment with the administration, Earl became employed at NOU. While working there, he enrolled in City College of New Orleans, located only two blocks from NOU, to work on completing a doctoral degree in Spanish. It was a convenient situation, working full-time at a local college and completing his doctoral requirements at a large university only a short distance away in the same city. One of the things that a first-time visitor to New Orleans notices is the aroma of the Cajun food. Well, Earl certainly knew about Cajun food from being with his friends in Kansas. He knew about grilling with Cajun blackening spices, such as cayenne pepper and paprika, with the juices and flavor sealed within any vegetables and meats being prepared. Beef, pork ribs, chicken, or another meat often were marinated overnight in some exotic sauce. Then the meat would be simmered in locally homemade barbecue sauce or some other Cajun mixture. Fish also was a very popular dish, especially when fried or grilled after being battered with special Cajun spices. The result of any dish that might be prepared was an offering that was tasty yet mild to the palate. While Earl was well familiar with the Cajun lifestyle, especially the food and its preparation, one big difference between his new home in Louisiana and his time in graduate school back in Kansas was the weather. Unlike Louisiana, in Kansas there was a long winter season of below freezing temperatures with snow-covered ground for weeks without end. He remembered one time after a heavy snowfall, he tried to prepare his car for driving to class early one morning, and it took over an hour to remove all the snow and ice and to warm the vehicle sufficiently enough to drive. Being in Kansas was a new experience for Earl. He couldn't help but remember many of those cold days going to and from his apartment to class. In New Orleans, it was very different. The winters were pleasant and festivals of all sorts were held in both the downtown area as well as in the various neighborhoods of the city. People would be out and about during the day when temperatures consistently hovered around 70 degrees with a calm, misty breeze coming off of Lake Esther. Neither the good Cajun food of the area nor the warm weather could outshine the music, and you could hear it in restaurants or at the many jazz clubs in the city, especially in the downtown area and in particular in the French Quarter. A close friend of Lincoln, his name was Harry, decided one evening to take Earl to one of the fashionable restaurants in the French Quarter. O'Brien's always had good music, good food, and a generally festive atmosphere for dining. The two got together one time shortly after dinner and made their way from his apartment in New Orleans to this area of the city, in the middle of downtown. Finally, they arrived at O'Brien's. As they entered the lobby, a large portion of it had a high ceiling with all kinds of plants everywhere, it seemed. The candlelit and cloth-covered tables added to the atmosphere that was conducive for the enjoyment of smooth jazz, which was the type of music usually played, often by an assembly of local musicians. "Well, Earl, how do you like this place?" Harry asked him. "Oh, it's great. I'm just enjoying the festive mood here, and especially the music," Earl said back to Harry. Earl arrived soon enough to listen to a popular legend of the blues, another genre of music popular in the city. Yes, he caught a little of Fats Domino, a local talent that struck it big time in the music industry during his day. When Fats finished his song, Earl continued to marvel at what he was witnessing. Both Earl and his friend carried on casual conversation for a while before heading back to Earl's apartment. Most of the activity in the downtown area seemed to be at night because during the day, the majority of people who filled the downtown area were workers in various businesses as well as larger corporations. Professionals dominated the area during the day. A scattering of hotels and restaurants, in addition to the abundance of a variety of smaller shops, made for a vibrant downtown when daytime temperatures often reached well over 90 degrees. With high humidity during the summer. The streets were noticeably filled with pedestrians, however, at lunchtime when employees headed toward nearby restaurants and pubs for a quick lunch. But in late evening, and especially at night, the area was even more active and vibrant. Activity was transformed from one of work to recreation and leisure. There were talented musicians who were not fortunate enough to have contracted to play at a restaurant or bar, so they would end up offering their craft on street corners and other strategic locations in the city. Besides the food, the first visible aspect of the culture was the seemingly constant playing of music, mainly jazz and the blues by local artists. On occasion, nationally renowned musicians and vocalists, like the legend that Earl saw earlier, could be seen at local restaurants, taverns, and bars. On a larger scale, nothing reflected the mood and culture of the city like the various festivals that occurred throughout the year. The biggest of all the festivals was the annual Mardi Gras during the late winter and early spring. Banners, lots of drinking of alcoholic beverages, and costumes reflected the festive nature of the occasion. It was a period of singing and cultural activities being held all over the city. For about a week, many city employees took the time off work to dress in their favorite costumes and participate in their preferred events during the festival, which could last a maximum duration of about 2 weeks. The festival is known to be rather unruly at times, when anything goes, so to speak. Legend has it that as a religious observance, people would tend to get all of their imperfections out of their system for a 2-week period of the festival. All of the activities, including the parties, binge drinking, and occasional civil disobedience, would often be the norm rather than the exception. People wearing costumes could be seen constantly on the streets, in retail establishments, restaurants, and hotels. On one occasion, Earl had a professional meeting that happened to begin 2 days prior to the end of the festival. He was at one of the premier hotels in the city for 2 nights while participating in the meeting. After going in the lobby area one evening with some colleagues, he saw 4 people dressed in gorilla suits dancing and singing in the hallway. It was just one of the many unusual experiences that Earl had while in direct contact with local culture. He was just glad the meeting would conclude the next day. Earl was often dismayed with the festival, including occasional civil disobedience that would take place in the streets. And he was very uncomfortable with some of the dark aspects of the festival's connections to some of the city's cultural history that included witchcraft, voodoo, and other folklore according to legend and tradition. Earl saw many of the events associated with the festival as a contrast to the more conservative Christian principles that he grew up with. But whatever their nature, the festival was always interesting and exciting. Earl only had a modest appreciation for the event and usually stayed at home during the Mardi Gras. We'll be back in a moment to finish the show. Well, so much for now. Remember, whatever you may be going through, whether good or bad, just keep in mind that there's always more good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.